So I would like to give a quick preface to this sermon, as I'm going to be talking about fishing this morning. And I'm going to note that while you will find out the honesty about where I am in fishing, that we have a master fisherman in the front row. If you did not know, Marshall Jones's retirement hobby is fishing. Right, Marshall? Last week you caught one this big, right? Yeah? Okay. We talked fishing before the service, but before we go any further, will you pray with me? Lord, may the words of my mouth and may the meditation of all our hearts and minds be acceptable and pleasing to you, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. All right, honesty moment from Pastor Stacy. I admit wholeheartedly that I have never been a fisherman or a fisherwoman either. I have never desired to spend a day in a river, on a boat, or on a dock trying to catch a fish. It just does not sound appealing to me. I would much prefer to head to the grocery store, into the meat section, and find myself an already dead, already skinned, boneless piece of fish that resembles nothing of what was once swimming freely in the water. I would like it to be ready to cook and eat and be yummy in my tummy. Though honestly, I will admit to you that I also have no desire whatsoever to touch a fish that still has eyes and look back at me. Of course, as I was writing that, getting ready for the sermon, a memory popped up into my head. 10 years ago, I had this brilliant idea. And you know how ideas go when you preface it with a brilliant idea. But I had this brilliant idea of the Sunday school children doing fish prints to hang in the sanctuary on a Sunday that I happened to be preaching this sermon. And so off to the store I went, into the meat and seafood section of the store, and what do you know? I found whole fish. Probably tilapia. Isn't that what the whole fish are in the store? Usually tilapia. And I picked it out, and I took it home, and I was so excited for 4-year-old Aiden and 6-year-old Kylie to test this out for me. So out the paints came, out the pieces of cloth came, and then it was time to get the fish out of the grocery store bag and pull the plastic back. And all of a sudden, my brilliant idea seemed like my worst nightmare. There are these two dead fish sitting in this little styrofoam tray. And I, for the life of me, could not come to a point of wanting to touch these fish. Now, at this point, I acknowledge how silly or city slicker I sound in this. But at 30-something years old at this point, it was going to be my first experience touching a whole fish, and obviously I was far from prepared for the moment. And in all honesty, and some on Facebook and YouTube are getting to see 6-year-old Kylie with her fish. Obviously, she didn't have issues with the fish, but I had issues with the fish. But in my all honesty, I chickened out, grabbed a paper towel, and used the paper towel to move the fish from the tray onto the paper towel that the kids painted them on. But the fish prints were beautiful, and the people in church loved seeing them. There you can see some of the final products for some of you of Kylie and Aiden. But our story today is, it's not about a silly young pastor who didn't want to touch a fish, but it was about professional fishermen who were having a bad day. Now, Marshall, fishermen never have a bad day, right? Never have a whole day of catching nothing, right? Or only catching stuff you want to throw back, right?
Catching weeds.
Okay, all right. I like watching Wicked Tuna. It's amazing how many times they spend 2-3 days out on the ocean and catch nothing. Just couldn't understand making a living that way. But these fishermen were having a bad day. After spending all night out on their boat, they came up completely empty. and knowing that they were going to have to go home, not just disappointed in a day of fun that didn't have catching, but going home knowing that they were bringing no food or income to support their families. I don't know how a rod and reel works, but I know how fear and failure feel, and I think most of us humans do. If you've never experienced fear or failure, come tell me about it. I'd love to hear it. But before these fishermen can wrap up their nets, stow them away, and head home for hopefully some sleep after all night, Jesus shows up on the shore. He's bound out on a preaching tour of Judea, and he finds himself on the shore of the Sea of Galilee, looking at Simon's now empty boat. And the text tells us that Jesus does not ask for permission, but simply invites himself on to Simon's boat and proceeds to ask him to shove off from shore so he can keep preaching from the boat. Everyday situation for the fishermen, I'm sure. But could you imagine a moment like that? Could you imagine parking your car and getting ready to go in the house, and all of a sudden somebody jumps in the passenger seat and says, "Hey, can you take me out on the freeway? I'd like to preach to the crowds along the side of the road." It sounds insane if you put it into today's context. But Simon does as he is told, and in such gets the best seat in the house boat for Jesus' preaching. Oh, come on, not even a chuckle at that one. Ah! But then Jesus has one final request. Put out into the deep water and let down the nets for a catch. Simon's got to be laughing at him at this point. The nets have been stowed away. We're done. We've been here all night during the time that you would catch fish. There are no fish to catch. But because you say so, I will do it. Do you have someone in your life like Jesus at this moment? Someone who will tell you something to do or give you advice, and despite all logic and knowledge saying it's wrong, you do it anyways because they are the ones that suggest it? I think we as parents hope that this is how our children respond to our advice. Yes, Carmen? Like they ever do, though. Ha ha. Like, for me, I remember one night that I was having dinner with friends. We had just had a ministry meeting. I was in college, and we were finishing our meal. My friends knew that I was dating a guy who just was not worth my time, but I kept giving it to him anyways. I didn't have the self-confidence to believe that I was worthy of anyone better than this lazy bump on a log that I was dating. Mom and Dad, if you're watching this, you know exactly who I'm talking about. And so what they did was they looked at me, the three of them, and said, "You're going to get in your car right now. You're going to drive over to where he lives. You're going to break up with him. And then you're going to come straight back here to tell us that you've done it." I didn't have the confidence to know what I needed to do, but they did, and because they told me to and I trusted them, I did just that. And that day I took a step into a life that was better for me than before that meal. Now when Simon took his boat out into the deep water, trusting Jesus, lowering his nets, he too began the first step in the rest of his better life. And what was the symbol of it? Hundreds and hundreds of pounds of fish, so much that two boats could hardly haul it in. Here, instead of coming home empty-handed, they were coming back to shore knowing that they were going to care for their family and probably a large part of the community with what they had brought in. Of course, seeing this miracle, seeing what Jesus was capable of, one, Peter went from calling him master to Lord. But in such then says, "I am not worthy to be with you, for I am a sinful man." Fortunately for Simon Peter, like it's fortunate for most of us, Jesus was not then or now looking for somebody who's been living a perfect life, but someone who has the faith to move mountains with him. Simon, James, and John all at this point drop everything on the lakeshore and follow Jesus on a journey of a lifetime, fishing not for tilapia or catfish, sorry, not salmon either, Marshall, but for men, women, and children who needed to be caught into a life with Christ and the freedom that comes with it. We today are called to be such fishers, but oftentimes we're like me with real fishing. We proclaim that we are inexperienced or ineffective or too overwhelmed with life to help others who are drowning. How many times have I heard it of somebody saying, there's somebody better equipped than I? Or worse yet, maybe we just prefer to sit on the shore, putting out our lines where we know there are no fish, but then we can say, well, we tried and failed, it didn't work, right? Or maybe we're like me with the real fish, too afraid to get close and too afraid of what it might feel like. But guess what? Jesus is not one to take excuses, and he doesn't ask permission. He is jumping into the boat that we call our messy life, and he is telling us to shove off from shore and find the deep waters. Now I admit, deep waters are scary, and the shore is safe. This is a fact. Jesus, can't we just cast our lines from solid ground? Can't we work ourselves towards the deep waters once we're comfortable and more experienced? Now, nobody is saying that we can't, but Jesus is asking us to have enough faith to follow him to the deep waters that are full of people who are lost, hurting, hungry, lonely, afraid, angry, desperate, and hopeless. To find such people, we don't have to go all the way to the Sea of Galilee. We find it outside our front doors, in our workplace, in our families, in our classes, and all throughout our social media. Lord, have mercy. People who are needing good news, people who are needing hope, people who are needing to hear that unconditional love is a free gift to them if they will just embrace the giver of it. Going to the deep waters, it's not about traversing a great physical distance. It's about an intentional seeking of those who are needing us and the God that is in us. Now, being the giver, the fisher, means giving what we have. God isn't asking for a miracle of us to produce something that's not in us. It's like my former friend, Michael. Michael was a homeless man who came to our worship in Desert Hot Springs during my very first year as a baby pastor. He took a liking to me and desired to give me regular gifts. Now, he would head into the sanctuary before service, and he would head up to the front. You've got to imagine that there's pews, and then there's privacy rails, and then when you go past them, you get to the pastor's seat. Are we imagining this? So you can't see the pastor's seat till you get all the way up there. So what he would do is he'd get in before service, and he would take whatever bag the goodies were in or whatever gift it was and stick it on my seat or in front of my seat, so that it wasn't until I'd processed all the way up and made that turn that he would be able to get to see my reaction of what I thought about his gift. Now, I really don't want to begin describing most of the gifts that he gave me, as most oftentimes the preschool director and I would use gloves to go through them, Yeah, you don't want me to go there. But I will mention two fitting gifts for this sermon. I don't know where or how he got them, but he was so excited for me to receive these two fish. Now, the first fish was the first one that I got, and what did I do? I headed up the aisle and turned, and what's on my seat but a singing Billy Bass fish? Do we all remember these? The plaque with the fish that would flap and sing? Oh my gosh, I looked at that and I just heard him laughing hysterically in the pews. Of course, what did I do? I turned it into the time for the children and made his day. Singing Billy Bass fish. But now the second gift was real fish. Two packaged whole fish, half stuck into a cheap hotel ice bucket with ice. Now, I headed up to my seat that Sunday, and it happened to be before service that I did this, and turned and saw those fish and just about fell over. Now, something I should mention is when these fish showed up that obviously weren't the freshest at this point, I was in my first trimester of pregnancy with Kylie. And I walked up there and the smell immediately made me want to lose my breakfast. So my preschool director, she and I were very close in ministry, grabbed it and put it out on the back porch of the church. Well, during the sermon service, right about the time of the sermon, so right about this point, our custodian Buck happened to stumble across this hotel bucket of fish out on the back porch. And I don't see his reaction to those fish, but I see his reaction when he comes running into the sanctuary, arms flapping, obviously upset about something, because Buck was convinced somebody was trying to put a hex on the church with these fish on the back porch. It was quite the entertainment that Sunday. It was a Sunday I will never forget. The singing Billy Bass and the hotel bucket of stinky fish have been great memories and stories from that first year of ministry. But I cannot ignore what's at the core of it, that Michael was giving gifts to me out of stores he really didn't have. Most of it was actually trash, half-drunk bottles of beer that were recapped. But his heart was of gold, and his intentions and generosity was overwhelming. We should all seek to be like Michael in his willingness to give. Because you see, we all have something to give, something that God has planted inside of us, and he is waiting for us to share it with the world. He is challenging us to not hug the safety of the shore, the comfort of the shallows, or the plethora of excuses that we are waiting to give. He is challenging us to head out to the deep waters of a troubled world with faith-filled hearts and Christ's good news. My friend, on this day, we are called to move away from the shore. We are called to cast our net with faith. We are called to not be afraid, for God is with us, and we will not fail. Amen.